listeners. Welcome to Garden Planet. You're with Selena and Karen.
Hey.
Today we have a few things we're going to discuss with you. The first thing is teas in the garden. And we're also going to have our famous plant of the week section to talk about. I mean, that is going to be about feijoas today.
All right, Karen. So when you talk about teas in the garden, you mean like having tea?
Of course you can have tea in any garden. That's an essential component. A tea in a wander?
Yes.
Now, I was actually, well, you can have a range of teas. You can have your drinkable herbal teas that you can pluck straight from your garden if you want. And then, of course, you've got your non-drinkable teas, which you can actually apply to the garden. And you can even apply your drinkable teas. You can throw that on any bush. So you've got your compost teas. You've got your weed teas. You've got seaweed teas. You've got manure tea. And there's even something I discovered called banana peel tea. Did you find anything?
Banana peel tea.
Like that? What sort of gardening teas did you come across in your studies, Selena?
Oh, okay. Oh, the same ones as yours, but I also had worm tea.
Oh.
Comfrey tea, and herb teas that we don't drink, but the plants drink.
Yeah.
And then,
well, that's right. I think that's where my weedy teas, they were talking there.
Yeah.
So we found some interesting things there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I found out that you can actually use tea bags directly in your garden. So for all those teetotalers out there, got buckets full of tea bags, there's actually, you can actually use them straight into your garden.
I'll just chuck them on.
Well, yes, you can. You can bury them straight into your garden. And these are several reasons why you should do that. They end up in the compost and then in the garden with me. But they add nutrients to your garden. The main one being tannic acid, which is a component in tea.
Okay.
And also, the actual tea bag itself will provide fibre from the abaca leaf stalks. That's apparently what they use to make tea bags out of.
Okay.
Junior, I didn't know that, but yeah.
Although some tea bags can't be broken down because they've got little staples in them.
Oh, that's true. You'd have to probably rip them out. I'm just talking about the standard tea bags.
Okay, yeah. What
you
I
get,
do is
like bell tea.
Just
you know.
Rip them open and
put
the contents on.
And diligently.
Mostly on the pot plants inside, though, because they usually have tea in there.
Oh, so you're already doing this practice?
Kind of.
Yeah. And they also say that by putting your tea bags into your garden, it also keeps some pests at bay, like rodents, cats, and even a number of insects are deterred by the tea odour, which I thought was interesting. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
They say they increase decomposition in the soil. So if you've got things like leaves, any sort of rough things that, you know, need to do a bit more decomposing, the tea bags will, the acid in the tea, that tannic acid that I mentioned earlier, supposedly helps with that composting rate of other items in your soil.
Wow.
So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Water retention is improved. I'd say that's from the added fibre, because if you add, like, the right fibre to your soil, your soil structure is improved, and that all improves things like water retention. And also the actual tea bag will impede growth of weeds. So if you pop a few tea bags, say, around seedlings or small plants, it can help, keep those weeds at bay.
Okay. Kind of like mulch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, tea's just dried up leaves.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
So can't be bad for your garden.
So that's for all those teetotalers out there that are wondering, what on earth can I do with these? Yeah. Straight in the ground.
When you've finished your cup of tea, just empty the remainders into your pot plants.
Yeah. Or dig them in.
Oh, usually I just...
Well, maybe I wouldn't recommend digging it into a pot plant, but if you've got like an established garden outside,
What are you doing with spade?
No need to
dig out your...
Be too destructive with it. Be gentle.
Karen, what you said about tea, what about coffee?
Coffee.
I've been using coffee grounds.
I noticed that, Selena. I'm glad you brought that up. I noticed a huge pile of them around the blueberry bush at the community garden.
Yes, that was me.
Yeah, guilty. But did you do some research on that? Did you find...
Well, it's kind of well-known in garden law, and if you don't know, well, you know now. Coffee grounds, the ones that, I don't make my own coffee because I'm not a coffee drinker, but you can get it from the cafe, and they just chuck it out they don't use it. They would even give it to landfill.
Yeah.
But if you say you want some coffee grounds, they will gladly give it to you for free. Oh.
And the same sort of thing would apply, like, with the tea, like with nutrients and soil structure and all that.
And the thing about coffee is it's can be quite acidic, so acid-loving plants like blueberries and, say, rhododendrons, camellias, even roses will like it.
I have noticed that the blueberry bush is doing very well. It's really enjoying that.
Yeah.
I was wondering, I was like, oh, what's going on here? And, yeah, awesome. Top job, Selena.
Yeah, so go to your cafe, ask them, provide them with a bucket, preferably one with a lid, and get them to fill it up for you, and they'll just gladly do that for you.
Cool. Hey, you know, with the tea bags thing, I also discovered that you can even, I haven't tried this, but you can actually grow directly from seed using tea bags. All you need is a plastic tray, like the seed growing trays, paper towel, whole lot of tea bags, put your paper towel on top of them, dampen it, and chuck your seeds on the top. And if you're lacking soil.
Okay, because it's a medium for them to put their own
soil. I mean, I've never tried that. It sounds, maybe we should experiment with that. I mean, this is what I found on Dr. Google.
Okay.
So.
I'll have to try that.
Who knows? But I think it's worth it. I can see how,
Have a go.
Honestly, Selena, I have struggled getting seeds to grow in soil at best. We'll see. Maybe that's the trick.
It's because chickens like to pick them out.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about even just soil in my in a tray. I've never had great luck growing from seed.
No.
I think we should do a session on that one day.
Okay, let's try that one.
Let's do it.
Okay.
So what did you discover? What teas did you...
Okay, so one that we haven't mentioned yet is worm tea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not made up chopped up worms. It's actually the worm castings or the worm droppings. And you dilute it with some water and, it becomes worm tea.
Oh, right.
And really good for... seedlings, like if you've got new seedlings growing, gives them a good start.
Yeah.
You can use it diluted or you can use it straight. I mean, it's all good.
All right.
So how do you get this? Well, if you have a worm farm, you can create this worm tea. And you have a special, like a tub.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the worms and you feed them and usually this tub will have a little tap. So that the droppings can collect in the water just...
I have seen those setups. Yeah, they've got a little tap on the side there.
And so the fluid drains out at the bottom.
So would you, sort of drench your worm farm and then sort of open up the tap and voila, there's your tea?
I've noticed that you don't always need to keep adding water because the worms generate a lot of moisture anyway.
Oh, okay.
So, depends on what you feed them because you would give
them... So it sort of just slowly drip out?
Yeah. It'll just slowly drip out because there's two compartments where it will collect all the fluid and draining and then the worms are on top on another layer.
Okay. I don't know much about... I mean, I've seen them and I've certainly had questions about them, but I don't... Yeah. It all seems... I've got enough worms in my... Have you... You had a worm farm before, or?
I started one last year. So I got a special one that the Compost Collective were giving out to people.
Yeah.
So if you do go to one of their workshops, they give you a voucher that you can spend on either a compost bin or a worm farm or a bokashi bucket.
Oh, and you went for the worm farm.
I went for the worm
farm. And are you finding it?
Yeah, it's good. It's all good. And the worms eat up your kitchen scraps.
Right.
So they're converting it to good fertiliser for your garden.
Yeah. I just wonder if, I don't know, sometimes I just wonder if we overcomplicate the whole... I mean, my compost, if it's done right, is full of worms anyway. I can scoop it out. I've got, just hands full of them.
Oh, okay.
So...
if it's already got worms in
it. Yeah, so...
You can...
But then if you can condense what they're creating down into a tea for your garden, that's really applicable too. So very, very cool.
So I think the idea with the tea is because it's in a liquid form, the plants can readily absorb it.
Right.
So if you want something to grow quickly and get them off to a good start, like seedlings,
yeah,
it's good to use a tea rather than maybe just apply the worm castings or the compost as a
well. Interestingly, and did you have anything more to say on the worm tea?
No, that's about it for me.
Just with your thoughts on the theory of, you know, making a tea from the castings, I actually did a bit of study on compost tea, which to me is a similar thing.
Yeah.
But probably not pure worm castings. Okay. It must be something about those castings, isn't there, that's really powerful because, yeah, I think we could delve into that quite deeply, that one. But, yeah, compost tea is another thing that you can do. So you're taking the idea of, you know, using your scraps and your compost and, you know, condensed nutrients and making tea out of it. Now, did you know that homemade compost, or I don't know, I guess commercial-made compost, is also known as black gold? Have you heard that in the gardening world?
I've come across it, yes.
Yeah, I discovered that. I mean, I always thought black gold was like oil.
Oh, no, no.
But I guess they're two valuable, very valuable things.
Just valuable, that's why black gold.
Well, compost tea, the tea you make from compost, is known as, in the gardening world, as the golden liquid.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's, which is an organic liquid supplement, nutritionally rich and well-balanced. Now, I went to a workshop a few years back, a community orchard workshop run by Dee, I hope I'm saying this right, Pignagy. She's a renowned New Zealand gardener and writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote this in my notes. She distinctly said, because, of course, all gardeners were going about feeding your garden.
Yeah.
Right, it's one of the must-do's. And she said, right, okay, so her favourite nutrients are wee, tea, and fish. Her three favourites.
Right.
She's, so there you go. I guess that can sort of a very sustainable way of gardening. I'm pretty sure she'd have a compostable toilet going on there.
Okay.
Where, you know, if you keep the wee and then you use it on your plants. Poo, not so much. Wouldn't recommend that. We've had this discussion before with watering earlier. But, but tea was, let's not get too delve too much into that one, but tea was one of the big ones too. She talked about, so I thought that was really relevant to what we were talking about today with gardening and tea.
So, Karen, this compost tea you're talking about, is it, do you get some compost and then you steep it in some water? Is that how you do it?
Yeah, I'll tell you all. Yeah, pretty much. You answered that question right there, Selena. Right. Great. Yeah, you just steep it.
And then
steep some aged compost in water.
Do you need to get
your fresh, like, garden scrap, cooking scraps, kitchen. No, no.
You've got it.
So, So you, it has to be aged. So it can be made from store-bought or homemade compost, but it has to be completely finished composting.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Now, finished compost has a sweet smell for those listeners who are like, oh, I don't know if it's finished or not. If you dig deep into your compost down the bottom, okay, lift it up, give it a sniff, it'll have like a sweet sort of distinctive odour. And you can tell, I guess it's sometimes hard for us. We know.
Yeah.
But you cannot, you'll know.
Yeah.
It's dense, it's dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the ratio that is recommended is one part organic matter to five parts water.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you can make it in as little as an hour, if you let it brew, or if you want a more super concentrate for a week or longer.
Okay.
So it's really that simple.
Karen, does it have to be hot water?
I didn't ask that question. No, I don't know. I suppose you wouldn't want it too hot, though. You want to, like,
and then do you strain
destroy
it
your microorganisms
because
in there?
You're not making a soup, you're making a tea.
Yeah, strain it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And then you can add it, like, other supplements to it if you really wanted to go nuts, like fish emulsion or powdered seaweed, and then that can really, like, turn your compost tea into real balanced fertiliser.
It sounds like a brewing factory or a...
I know. Sounds very sign. I'm pretty sure my neighbours wonder what the heck sort of smells are coming and from my side of the fence.
Do you have, like, barrels all along the side of your house?
Buckets. Yeah. But, you know, what they say, like, you know, well-fed garden's a happy garden. Yeah. So... yeah, those were the two sort of teas I was looking at today.
Okay.
Now, there was another thing we were going to discuss today, Selena, if we had time, and that was about a nutrient, since we're on the topic of nutrients for the garden, that's not liquid, it's more of a solid.
Oh, yes.
What was that one? Was it biochar?
It's called biochar, and I had never heard of it until... maybe a few months ago when all these garden magazines were talking about it, and so I thought I might do some research. What is it?
Yeah.
Is it a secret and special ingredient that we must know
about? Oh, I'm intrigued.
So biochar is actually just another name for charcoal.
Yeah.
But it's sort of crushed up, and you can apply it as a soil amendment to your garden.
Oh.
And what it does is... charcoal is made of carbon material that's been charred. And it hasn't been burnt to ashes. It's just to that stage where it's charred.
They call that activated charcoal. Is that the same thing? I know I've got some in the cupboard. And if you ever get a bit of a upset stomach, you can consume this activated charcoal.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it would do similar things in your garden, just kind of get that balance back, absorb any impurities.
Yeah.
That kind of deal.
So what it does is it's not a nutrient so much as it provides a habitat for microbes to metabolize all the minerals that you're giving to the soil. So it'll hold on to them longer.
Oh, right.
And so all your goodness that you're adding with all your teas and stuff won't be like washed away.
Yeah, well, that would say why on the human made activated charcoal not to consume it, say if you've just had like a big healthy meal. Probably if you've had like a Big Mac or something like that, sweet, consume it. But because of the very fact that it does absorb those good minerals as well. Those purities as well as the impurities.
So it acts as an adsorber, not an absorber. I didn't quite know what the difference was, but because the carbon doesn't break down, it like stays in the soil forever. So it will always be there to facilitate that crossing of the, what they call positive and negative ions, so that the minerals can be absorbed.
Oh, that's starting to sound
very scientific.
Very scientific, Selena. My goodness.
Yes.
Where can you buy this biochar just at your garden centre?
Apparently you can, but you can actually make it yourself.
Oh.
If you have an incinerator and you can make it out of, say, prunings or any carbon material and just burn it without oxygen, so that creates this charcoal.
Yeah.
They call it pyrolysis.
Oh, my goodness, yes, you are such a scientist today.
Very scientific.
Well done, you. Cool. So you can just use your char from a fire, but it's obviously not wood that's, like, treated or, pure wood. And then what?
And then some people say to inoculate it with some good bacteria.
Oh, okay.
So that it will, you know, be beneficial for... the roots of your garden, and then just add it to your garden as a soil amendment.
The biochar that you buy, like in shops, does that come with the bacteria on it? Or
I have to investigate that because I actually haven't seen too much of it being sold. So it's a new thing. I don't think people have really got into it yet.
Okay,
but they've kind of discovered it because people were looking into why are the soils in Peru in the Amazon so rich.
Okay.
And apparently it's because the Amazonians in years past had been creating this biochar to raise the fertility of their soil.
Oh, really?
And it's still there thousands of years later and still growing crops.
Well, as you know, my mother's an avid gardener, and growing up as a child, I remember her occasionally, not all the time. I don't think it's something you want to overdo, is it? I don't know. I guess it would depend on your soil health, I suppose, and what you want to achieve. But she would, because we had a fireplace, and she would, I'd see her putting the charcoal and with the compost occasionally. Maybe she just instinctively, although she is a chemist. But yeah, she studied chemistry, so she probably had some, in the back of the brain there's some science going on,
Well, there's something in it, because the charcoal can absorb the heavy toxins and heavy metals, creating them, making them benign, I suppose.
Mm.
And it must do something. I'll have to check it out, though. We have to experiment.
Yeah, we could definitely delve deeper with that one too, Selena. Because you wouldn't want your mercury and your...
No.
All those, your lead and...
Yeah.
This is... Oh, goodness me, I'm feeling a science project coming up.
They say... There are quite a number of claims for the biochar saying that it could prevent the carbon going into the air and being wasted. So, all the carbon credits and things.
But okay.
The problem with that is you don't want to suddenly burn down everything just to create this biochar.
Yeah.
You want to, maybe use what you've got, like your waste clipping, your waste prunings and your extras that you don't need that you can use to make this.
Yeah, and maybe it's like anything. There's always going to be a bit of bad with the good,
Yeah.
Positives and negatives.
Karen, I had a question from Jackie, one of our listeners, about going back to the tea.
Yeah.
About the different herbs you can use to make tea.
Right.
And what were their properties? I mean, how do they help different plants? Or, what are their specific things that they do.
Yeah.
So this is
like the herbal teas that maybe you could drink and apply to your garden. Tell us about it. What did you find?
Well, I found in some schools of thought, especially the biodynamic schools, they have a special 6-herb preparation, and I'll give you the names of the herbs that they use. So there's stinging nettle, chamomile, dandelion, oak tree bark or oak leaves, yarrow, and valerian. And they would make tea out of these. And there's a whole method of doing this in their way of doing it, where they get the intestines from stags or cows and dry them up and then stuff them, and then they hang them out on a tree for, I don't know, 6 months until the full moon, and then...
Yeah.
So it is kind of a bit esoteric.
Well, okay, all right. Okay. But, I mean, let's face it, intestines back in the day were used for a lot of purposes.
Yeah.
Water bags...
Yeah.
All sorts of things. Wine bags. Why not? I can see where that came from. Yeah.
And so these teas are called biodynamic preparations, and they all have different numbers. I really don't want to know if I can get right into this. But not everyone has these herbs in their garden, but I'm sure people have the common ones like dandelion and maybe comfrey.
And you use the whole plant, like roots and everything?
For the... dandelions, you use the flowers. For nettle, you can just dry the leaves.
Yeah. So, sorry being a pain, but why wouldn't you use the dandelion leaves? What was there, do you know?
They're just different ways of doing it, I suppose. Yeah, so they generate growth and they make your plants healthier. It's just the properties of these plants, because these weeds, herbs, are so tough. They give their properties, if they're made into tea, to your other plants. So that's why. And also,
that's where the biodynamic term comes from.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And with these teas, you're supposed to apply them freshly made, so you can't just keep them forever. And
all right.
Yeah. And you're supposed to stir them up for maybe an hour or so in a clockwise direction and an anti-clockwise direction.
All right.
To biodynamize them. And that supposedly gets the energies all stirred up.
Okay.
So there's a bit more to it than just making a tea.
I'd probably just give it a good old shake up.
Yeah. Shake it up
down,
and down.
Sideways, that way. So, left, right. Yeah. But great, cool. Oh, well, Did you get it? I hope all the listeners got a note of that.
Yes.
Yeah, well, okay. They can always check it out on the podcast if they needed to anyway, just those six herbs, yeah.
Yeah. So, Karen, we're going to go to your plant of the week.
Yes, I'm going to have to quickly let the listeners know about this.
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. He'd spent about an hour chatting with a flower, and here's the tale the flower told. Quote, I'm a lonely little petunia and an onion patch.
Okay, so the humble feijoa, plant of the week. All right. It's an evergreen perennial tree, which means it's green forever.
Right.
All right. And it's not going to die. You can plant it, and it'll be there next year and the year after and the year after. Okay? And it belongs to the flowering plant in the myrtle family, which
yes.
is something I discovered. It's actually native to a number of countries in South America. And was one of the reasons why one of its common names is the Brazilian guava. Now, have you ever tried guava?
I've tried the Chilean guava. I don't know if it's the same.
It's got that gritty kind of texture that you'll find when you eat a feijoa. I was telling my fiancé about this. And he was like, oh, I see the likeness. So there you go. Now, it needs a warm, temperate to subtropical climate to grow ideally, but requires at least 50 hours of winter chilling for it to fruit. And it is frost tolerant. Now, I have to try and, I've got a whole list of information here, but I'm going to try and just give you a few of the basic facts here that might be of interest. The shrub has ended up doing incredibly well in New Zealand. Which is, why large quantities of the fruit are grown here, and it's become a very popular garden tree. Now, the shrub has very few insect pests, although in northern New Zealand, the guava moth can be a problem. I haven't heard of that one before, but there you go. I've never had any issues with my feijoas. They just keep going. I just leave them to it. It's an excellent source of vitamin C, providing 40% of the daily value. I think that's if you have 100 grams of it. And it doesn't supply any other nutrients in any significant amount.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is interesting. It's used as an interesting addition to fruit smoothies and can be used to make wine, cider, and even feijoa-infused vodka. The flavour is aromatic, strong and complex, inviting comparison with guava. It's great with strawberry and pineapple and often contains a faint wintergreen aftertaste. It is possible to buy feijoa yogurt, fruit drinks, jam, ice cream and such in New Zealand. This was in Google.
Really?
So we got a few mentions with the feijoa.
Okay.
Yeah, whereas it's not such a biggie in other places of the world. So, yeah, I guess it's right there in our backyard. Also, the flower petals are edible, having a slightly sweet flavour with hints of cinnamon.
Oh, thanks, Karen.
So there you go. Yeah. You can use all of it.
And it makes great pies.
I've never tried a feijoa pie. Does not interest me.
No, use it just like apple and it makes feijoa pie.
I'll give it a shot now that you've mentioned it, Selena.
Wonderful, Karen. I love feijoas.
Oh, so do I. One of my favourites.
I'm afraid that's all we have time for. Thanks, Karen, for sharing with us with all the teas and feijoas and everything.
Oh, you're welcome, Selena. It's been a pleasure.
Now, listeners, you can always email us if there's any topic you'd like to hear more about at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com. And we'll be back next week with more gardening tips and advice.
Can't wait. Thanks, Selena.
Happy gardening, everyone.